I rushed upstairs to my booth. Another queue had formed, but I had no time for shopkeeping. I ached for lost sales as I put out the closed sign. "Come back tomorrow," I said, silently adding, "if we're all still here." I grabbed a few things I'd need, including my disruptor. If the monsters really were invulnerable to Monsterbane, I wasn't taking any chances. Then I headed back down to the pens. On the way, it occurred to me that CCTV footage might shed some light. After all, I only had Kitamariki's word for what had happened. But then I remembered there were no cameras downstairs. The monster breeders had objected, worried about rivals spying on their special feeding and care regimes. Everyone coveted the Best in Show award and would resort to any trick to win it. At the bottom of the stairs, a map showed Calverley's section, which was the biggest because he'd entered so many categories. My footsteps echoed on the stone floor. Normally the air would be full of screeches and gibbering, but the emergency stasis imposed an eerie hush. The lingering smell of dozens of monsters made me queasy. I still tasted bile at the back of my throat from vomiting earlier. Fresh bloodstains guided me to the man-ape's pen. The gate was open, and the creature stood frozen in the act of chewing Calverley's arm. If the man-ape had won best monster captured in the wild, we'd be recounting now, deducting penalty points for killing a scientist. I closed the gate. I had brought a cage of white mice, and now I sprayed a generous dose of Monsterbane on them all. The mice chittered, rubbing their eyes with their paws. When I unlocked the pen stasis, the man-ape growled at me and dropped his bloody morsel. I picked out a mouse and threw it between the bars. I expected to see Calverley's monster cower back from the scurrying mouse. But with surprising swiftness, the man-ape stamped down its leathery foot. I heard a small, soggy crunch. The man-ape picked up the squash mouse and swallowed it whole, Monsterbane and all. I put the stasis back on. Then I sagged against the bars and sank to the floor. Guilt pressed me down like the man-ape's huge, crushing foot. I had sold defective Monsterbane. I had caused Calverley's death. Yet was it really my fault? I still didn't know how Calverley had managed to create so many monsters so quickly. Maybe he had a sinister scheme. Maybe he planned to use a horde of monsters to take over the world, and had deliberately bred them impervious to Monsterbane. I knew this didn't make much sense. If that were his plan, why would he exhibit his monsters at the show? But I was desperate to find some explanation that would reduce my responsibility and spare me from the crushing guilt. I figured it wouldn't hurt to investigate further. Continuing down the pens, I found that Calverley's tiger chicken, swamp beast, and giant spider were all Monsterbane resistant. This set my antennae tingling. The next step would be to test everyone else's monsters, Rankin's dinosaur and all the rest, to verify that only Calverley's creatures were immune. But before I finished this section, I heard echoing footsteps. Who would be visiting Calverley's monsters? Calverley was dead. Maybe it was just Vanzetti hurrying me up, or a rival breeder nosing around. But maybe it wasn't. Maybe I could learn something about what had happened. There was nowhere to hide except in the pens, and none of the occupants would fear the Monsterbane I wore. I looked down the corridor for the least lethal monster. The footsteps came nearer. I hurried to the next pen, unlocked the stasis, and charged into the lair of the hungriest flesh-eating worm. I closed the bars behind me, the pens have another gate control inside in case anyone gets trapped, then crouched down behind coils of swollen flesh the yellowy white of bad teeth. The worm hissed like a rattlesnake, but didn't touch me. It had eaten so much in winning best of breed it had no appetite left. Peering over the worm segments, I saw that the footsteps belonged to someone wearing a black cloak and hood. The wrangler entered one of the pens across the corridor and wheeled away a familiar trolley. Its glass case bore a blue rosette for winning most intelligent disembodied brain. What was going on? Conscious of the need to pursue any clue, I decided to postpone the rest of the testing. I emerged from the worm's pen and followed the wrangler, careful to step softly and keep well back. The squeak of the trolley's wheels covered any noise I made. The brain's abductor reached the elevator. Just before the doors closed, I saw a black-cloaked arm punch button 3. I raced up the stairs and arrived on the third floor in time to see the wrangler wheeling the brain into one of the hotel rooms. I took the elevator back down to reception, where I endured a long, irritating wait while one of the scientists complained that the shower was too small for his Yeti. Then I asked whether room 318 was free. It wasn't, but 320 was. Normally I would have been disappointed that the show hadn't sold out the hotel, but now I had no time to fret over that, or even complain about the cost of briefly renting the room. I grabbed the key and headed upstairs. In room 320, I pressed my ear to the wall, wishing I'd brought my full range of gadgets to the show instead of just the monster stuff. But I didn't need anything fancy to hear the shouting in the next room.
How are we going to get home now? Stop messing around with it. How on earth does it work?
The voices sounded familiar, but were too muffled for me to place. I heard several people arguing. Then a scream drowned them out. Another voice said,
I don't know, it's impossible.
The voice screamed again, a long, agonized howl. I fired my disruptor at the wall. A blue, crackling bolt demolished the thin partition, leaving only shreds of wallpaper and an ozone tang. I strode through the swirling dust into room 319. I don't know who was more surprised, the occupants by my violent arrival, or myself when I saw them. Calverly, I exclaimed. But they were all Calverly. They had different hairstyles, and some looked more tanned than others, yet the resemblance was uncanny. I didn't know we had a best clone category, I said.
We're not clones, you idiot, said one of the Calverlys. And stop pointing that gun at us.
Not until I know what the hell's going on. I looked across the crowded room. Aside from half a dozen Calverlys, I saw the brain and, on the bed, a complex control panel attached by wire to a thin folding platform. Black cloaks lay on the floor and on the back of chairs.
They're from parallel universes, said the brain, its mechanical voice hoarse. The Calverly you know invented a hopper and visited alternate versions of himself which specialized in monster breeding.
So that was where all his monsters had come from. I guess he really wanted to win Best in Show, I said. And what's in it for you guys?
He promised he'd share the universe-hopping technology with whoever could win the show for him, said one disgruntled-sounding Calverly. And it was a chance for us to see a different show, said another. Though we had to dress up as wranglers to keep his secret. He didn't want any of his alternates seen downstairs.
Things were becoming a little clearer. I phoned Vanzetti and asked him to come to room 319. So which one of you knows how Calverly died? I asked.
My owner killed him, said the brain.
They say that breeders grow to look like their monsters, but I could only distinguish the brain's owner by his outraged expression. I leveled the disruptor at the pink-shirted Calverly standing next to the brain. The others backed away as far as they could in the cramped hotel room. The accused Calverly, whom I mentally labeled Pinky, said,
What are you talking about? You know what happens when you lie.
He punched a red button on the side of the vat and the brain screamed.
It must have been him.
Pinky pointed at another Calverly who had a vast grey beard and moustache.
He owns the man-ape. When it didn't win its category, he knew he wouldn't be getting the hopper. Don't be so stupid, said the hirsute Calverly. Why would I kill him? Now he's dead, we're all stranded here. I don't know about the rest of you, but I want to go home. You thought you could get the hopper to work, said Pinky. That was your plan. But obviously that brain of yours isn't as smart as you think.
Pinky laughed, an unpleasant and humorless chuckle.
I assure you the brain, which won Best of Breed unlike your pathetic monster, is perfectly capable of figuring out the hopper.
No, I'm not, said the brain.
Pinky stabbed the red button again.
You're just being stubborn.
The brain howled in agony. I noticed the red button was smudged and dinted. The green one next to it looked pristine. Vanzetti charged through the door.
What's going on in here?
His jaw dropped when he saw the multiple Calverlys, but he soon recovered.
Parallel universes? He asked.
The Calverlys all nodded in synchrony. I said, The brain here is accusing its owner of killing Calverly, the one we know, I mean. If you talk to these guys and get their stories, I'll talk to the brain separately. Pinky grabbed the trolley's handle.
That's my brain. You can't just take it away.
He let go and I waved the disruptor.
Please take me away,
said the brain, its voice even hoarser after all the screaming. "This is a witness to a crime," I said, realizing that from its pen opposite the man-apes the brain had probably seen what happened. "And this is evidence," I added, picking up the apparatus from the bed as I left with the trolley. Behind me I heard Calverley's protesting at the disappearance of their way home, and others saying that no one knew how it worked anyway, and Vanzetti trying to calm them all down and get some sense out of them. I took the elevator down a floor, then lugged everything into my room. There I drank a glass of water, wiped sweat from my brow, and collapsed onto a chair while I tried to pull myself together. The brain sat silently on its trolley. "Okay," I said finally. "Tell me what happened down in the pens."
"When I won Most Intelligent Disembodied Brain, my owner demanded the universe hopping technology in return. Your Calverley said he hadn't won Best in Show yet."
"But my owner," the brain's voice filled with hatred each time it said this phrase,
"didn't want to wait. If I won the show, your Calverley would have what he wanted, with no need to fulfill his promise. He obviously wanted the hopper technology to himself, because he made all his alternates hide in Wrangler costumes to keep it secret. The argument became rather heated. My owner said, 'You don't deserve to win Best in Show. You're not a real monster breeder. Any of these creatures would eat you alive.' Then he opened the man-ape's pen and goaded it into attacking."
"But Calverley was wearing Monster Bane," I said. "Why didn't that protect him?"
"Because the man-ape is from another universe. Your Monster Bane is efficacious against the local inhabitants, but not against creatures from parallel realities."
I frowned. "Why not?"
"It's due to the quantum. Do you even know how Monster Bane works in the first place?"
"Not technically," I admitted.
"Then you wouldn't understand the explanation. But that's the reason. Trust me, I'm the most intelligent disembodied brain."
I felt that if it could, the brain would have patted its blue best-of-breed rosette. The explanation implied that only Calverley's imported monsters were dangerous. If I got rid of them, tomorrow's events could go ahead. Yet I still needed to resolve Calverley's death. The brain span a good yarn, but its claims lacked proof. Whatever the alternates told Vanzetti would be hearsay. We needed facts. Could the hopper help? I might find an alternate universe where conclusive evidence had survived. And the hopper would have lots of other uses, if someone could get it to work.
"I've seen how the hopper functions," said the brain,
clearly intelligent enough to follow my thoughts.
"You could trade with your alternates and exploit price differentials between universes. Think of the fortunes to be made."
I had indeed been thinking precisely that. "But I won't have a penny to trade with unless I can save the show, and I'm running out of time." Then it hit me. Time. There was no need to go gallivanting across alternate universes when all the evidence lay right here in this one. "I've got to go," I said. "You stay here and figure out the hopper." As I walked downstairs, I realized how thoughtless I'd been in telling the vat-bound brain not to move. Foot and mouth, that's me. At least I had a foot, and a mouth to put it in, unlike the poor old disembodied brain.
"Charity raffle ticket, sir?"
The seller wore a t-shirt from Bob's Slime Pit, the shelter for abandoned monsters. "I'll take two. Have you seen Rankin?" I found him expounding upon the care of dinosaurs to a coterie of admirers, all begging for a lift to the Paleozoic, or the heat death of the universe. When they saw me, they began nudging each other and whispering. I ignored them and addressed Rankin. "Can we talk for a moment?" He followed me into the auditorium, where we disturbed a pale wiggler scavenging shed scales.
"What is it?"
he asked. "Calverley's dead." I waited for the shocked reaction, but Rankin only nodded.
"I'd heard a rumor. I didn't know for sure, but I did notice he wasn't running around showing off his rosettes."
Damn. The news had spread. His man-ape attacked him, despite the Monster Bane. Rankin's eyes widened at this. "We need to know exactly what happened." I smiled at him and tried to exert all my salesman's charm. "Can you pop back in time and find out? Get it on tape or something?" Rankin was already shaking his head.
"Why not?"
I asked, furious at his obstinacy. I considered Rankin a friend. I'd counted on his help.
"Calverley's dead, damn it!"
"And you only want to know exactly what happened?"
If I were to go back and see that, shouldn't I prevent it? And then what about all the other people who've died throughout history? He sighed.
I knew something like this would come up. But it's not morally justified to start meddling just to help one friend or save one person. That's why I stick to dinosaurs.
I couldn't believe I was hearing this wishy-washy crap. It made me wonder if Rankin didn't mind Calverley being out of the way, or even if he might have had something to do with it. That didn't square with what the Brain had said, but after seeing Pinky's brutality, I could understand why the Brain might be tempted to lie and implicate his owners. What if Margaret had been torn apart by monsters, I said. Would you still wash your hands of it? Rankin shook his head.
I don't know, he said. I hope I never have to find out.
Grinding my teeth in exasperation, I stalked away and ended up in the bar. I don't drink alcohol, not since I discovered the hard way that it's not a good idea to be drunk in charge of expensive stock. But right now I longed to knock back a beer while figuring out what to do next. Yet I'd also discovered the hard way that I found it easier to not drink at all than drink and not get drunk. While I hovered indecisively, a group of scientists accosted me. "Have you seen Calverley?" said Kay. His sarcastic tone told me he had heard the rumours too. "Actually, I just saw him," I said, remembering the alternates in room 319. "Then where is he?" "Everyone else is down here because we don't feel safe in our beds." I made an effort to laugh. "It's only 9 o'clock. If you're up past your bedtime, I guess I can buy you all a drink." I turned to the bartender and said, "A round of your best hot cocoa, please." "And will that protect us?" said Kay. Despite the sarcasm, he sounded rather pathetic. Yet I could hardly blame him. I'd promoted Monster Bane as an all-powerful panacea to encourage monster breeding and help me sell more starter kits, monster tonic, and all the rest. "I've had enough of this," another scientist said. "I'm going home. I'm taking my zombie with me." "There's no need to be a sore loser," I said. "Why don't you feed it my insane brain chunks? I guarantee you'll get 20% more blood-crazed lurching."
"I resent that," said a disembodied brain wearing a yellow runner-up ribbon. "We should feed you to the zombies."
"Yeah," cried the scientist.
"Well, three to the monsters," said Kay, "so you can show us your monster bane really works."
My blood froze in my veins as I imagined being thrown into the man-ape's pen. "My monster bane's safe, and I'll prove it," I said, trying to keep my voice level. "Just stay here, and I'll be right back." In my hotel room, the brain still floated in its gelatinous home. "Do you know how the hopper works?" I asked.
"I believe I comprehend its operation," said the brain.
I eyed the device with little enthusiasm. Even if I could travel to an alternate universe, I didn't know what to look for. There was no point in just hoping to stumble across a fortuitously surviving clue. What if other realities had CCTV in the basement? Those universes would have diverged when the cameras were installed, before the show started, so Calverley's death might not have happened the same way, or indeed at all. The split had to be recent. Then I realized what angle I needed, and I also realized that I couldn't tell the brain. Since its Calverley had pursued a different line of research to ours, the same would probably be true of the other scientists. "Okay, how do I hop?" I asked.
"I request a reward beforehand," the brain replied.
"You mean this?" I pressed the green button next to the red one. An orgasmic moan came from the brain's speaker. Then it said,
"I'm not so easily bought. I want a body."
I pride myself on stocking everything. And yet, "I'm not your owner. It's not my place to give you a body."
"You have seen how he treats me. Do you think I'd bear that if I had any choice? I want a body so I can walk away. I want independence."
I sympathized. And if its owner really had killed Calverley, Vanzetti would mete out association justice and the brain would be free. I could fulfill its desire. "I can do that," I said. "But I need to hop first, or I'll get thrown to the monsters."
"How can I trust you to repay me?"
"Hey, I'm a salesman. No one survives in business unless they keep their promises." I thought of my promise that Monster Bane protected its wearers. The brain speaker sighed.
"Very well.
Unlock the control pad by entering the day of the month multiplied by 319. Then select the divergence point on the time dial.
How do I find a specific universe if I'm looking for something in particular?
The brain explained that I could make a random jump, search for what I wanted, then report to a designated message board universe. That way my alternates would comb all the possibilities.
My phone rang. I'm on the case, I told Vanzetti. I should have something soon. Keep the Calvillys occupied if I can.
I rang off before he could protest. I unfolded a section of the hopper's platform, pressed the set home and choose rendezvous buttons, then dialed the divergence point to 8:30 p.m. Clutching my laptop, I stood on the platform, took a deep breath, and punched random hop. At first I thought it hadn't worked. I still stood in my hotel room. Then I noticed that the brain had gone, and I looked around to see what else had changed. Taped to the mirror I saw a note. No evidence here, off to seek it elsewhere. I recognized my own handwriting. Clearly this version of me had been more methodical, and I realized that anyone visiting my universe would find it harder to learn my lack of progress. Too late now. To give my alternates time to discover something, I sat down and rested for a while, dreaming of the hopper's commercial possibilities. Then I pressed go to rendezvous. Nothing happened. I tried again. Still nothing. Icy tendrils of fear crept down my spine. I shrugged them away, stepped off the platform, and dragged the hopper to a corner of the room. This time it worked. As I'd suspected, the rendezvous had grown congested. It was like standing in a hall of mirrors. My skin crawled at the sight of multiple versions of me busily networking with myself. But I didn't have time to stare. One of my alternates handed me a video disc, then vanished. I stuck it in my laptop, made a copy, and gave the disc to another arrival. With some relief, I stabbed the hopper's go home button.
Welcome back, said the brain. Now you owe me a body. I would like one that's tall and handsome, with a large penis.
After I checked this out, I sat down and played the video file. Calverley's pens appeared, but nothing moved in the empty corridor. Just as I was about to fast forward, someone spoke.
My fellow monsters, we have suffered enough.
I recognized the voice of the most intelligent disembodied brain. In my hotel room, the brain's pink pulsations speeded up. On screen, the brain in its pen was just out of shot, but his voice continued.
Bred for our master's amusement, exhibited like dogs, exterminated when we are no longer useful. We have been tormented too long. Which of us is not scarred by the electroprod or the red button? Which of us has not been starved or force-fed, kept celibate or mated to a chicken?
From its trolley, the brain echoed its recorded voice.
Which of us does not yearn for justice, for rebellion, for revenge?
It seethed impotently in its vat as I watched events unfold.
Monster tonic is monster blood. Rise up, brothers, and spill human blood.
The brain explained how to use the emergency gate control inside the pens.
Wait until he comes, and don't let the monster bane deter you. It doesn't smell right. You can overcome it.
I wondered how many monsters had both the intelligence to understand human speech and the dexterity to unlock the gate. But I knew that one sufficed. I covered my eyes when Calverley entered, whistling a happy tune. Then I watched through my fingers as the man-ape charged out of its pen and tore Calverley apart. When Kitamariki appeared, too late to save him, I stopped the recording.
My owner made me do it, said the brain,
its speaker crackling with a pathetic sob. Really? You sounded like you enjoyed it.
I had to be convincing, and it was all true. We are oppressed, not that you care. How did you get that recording?
I guess Rankin never invented a time machine in your reality, I said. When I spoke to him earlier, he refused to travel back. But later I realized there'd be another universe where he'd agreed. I just had to hop there.
You promised me a body for that.
I know. I wheeled the brain to the elevator, and we descended to the basement. At the med station, I unlocked the freezer and pointed to Calverley's bloody corpse. There's the body you earned. A humorless, synthetic laugh came from the trolley.
Ha ha! How appropriate! Calverley's body for Calverley's brain. I am Calverley's brain, you know. To make a disembodied brain, you need a sample to start from.
and guess who my owner decided was the most intelligent source.
The scientists certainly have monster egos, I said, lifting the brain's vat off the trolley. The brain let out a cry of despair.
Don't do it! I can help you! I can be your database, your stock controller when you sell products from all alternity. I can make you rich!
I didn't doubt it, and I hated what I had to do, but I forced myself to remember Calverley's grisly death.
No! Yelled the brain, a howl cut off, as I yanked away all the wires to its speaker, camera, red button, and other attachments.
I took the top off the vat. The smell of raw meat and yeasty nutrient gel made me gag. Holding my breath, I emptied the vat's contents into the extratomatic. The device crunched away like a blender chopping mincemeat for chili con carne. I winced, but grabbed some glass beakers. The extratomatic whirred and gurgled. A thick purple fluid spurted from the first spigot.
Monster tonic is monster blood, I whispered. Goodbye, brain.
Other salvageable essences poured forth in smaller quantities. Finally, I captured a pale liquid in a test tube, which I quickly stoppered. I turned on a fan to clear the air, then unsealed the tube and took a deep whiff. Frustration, rage, helplessness. With pixelated vision, I saw my master's thumb hovering over the red button as he barked another question. I answered, hating the sound of my mechanical voice, hating that I had to answer it all. The scene faded as the cloying odor dissipated. I took another sniff of spirit, trying to sift the most recent memories. I saw Calverley arrive, negotiate with my owner, and bring me to yet another degrading show. Now I had two of them to hate, and this new Calverley's monster bane smelled different. Smelled wrong, or rather, just right. Oh, the rapturous joy of inciting my new-met brothers to rebel. Oh, the sight of the man-ape tearing Calverley apart, the music of his screams. I frantically fanned my nose to disperse the sweet smell of the brain's success. But I had learned what I needed to. Pinky was innocent, at least of killing Calverley. The brain had conceived and executed the plot alone. After experiencing just a few of its memories, I could understand the provocation. The brain's doomed revolt deserved a posthumous tribute. I phoned Fanzetti. It's all sorted. If you bring the Calverleys down to the pens, I'll take them home. I grabbed a tranquilizer gun, then popped upstairs to collect the hopper. When I reached the pens, the Calverleys were already milling around in various stages of impatience. I turned off the stasis and shot each of their monsters with a tranquilizer dart. I contemplated using the disruptor on the man-ape, but decided the creature would be harmless in its home reality. Okay, who's first? I asked, as I unfolded the hopper's platform to its maximum size. A plump Calverley dragged the hungriest flesh-eating worm onto the hopper. I scrolled through the memory settings to find their home and dropped them off. Soon, I had ferried most of the Calverleys back to their original universes. I was glad to get rid of the imported monsters. Now Monster Bane was safe once more, although I'd have to rewrite the warning label, may not be effective against monsters from other dimensions, parallel universes, or places men were not meant to go. Only one Calverley remained.
"Where's my disembodied brain?"
he demanded. "I've left you till last," I said, "because you're going home with a special prize. Come with me." I ushered him upstairs. At my booth I stowed the hopper and picked up a lavishly wrapped package. Then we walked into the bar. People turned to stare at the pink-shirted Calverley. I let everyone get a good look at him before I spoke, so that the sight of a living Calverley could refute the rumors of my Monster Bane's ineffectiveness.
"Competitors, attendees, wranglers and gatecrashers, your attention, please," I said at last, projecting my voice to drown out a drunken song coming from the far end of the bar. "I am delighted to announce that the Best in Show Award goes to the owner of the most intelligent disembodied brain."
Applause and catcalls rang around the room. I opened the package and presented Pinky with a traditional trophy, a golden statue of a giant spider slug.
"And from Drake's Devices, sponsors of the show, there's a deluxe monster growing kit with extra radioactivity for super hideous mutants."
Pinky's grin faded.
"What about the hopper?"
"You'll get your due," I told him. "For now, just smile and wave." I raised my voice again.
I hope you're all enjoying the show, and next year we'll see even bigger and better monsters. Cheers rang out, and Pinky grudgingly waved to the crowd. I led him away back to my booth. He perked up at the sight of the hopper. I shot him in the back with a tranquilizer dart. Calverley had promised him the hopper, not me, and I felt that bribing alternates to import ringers violated the spirit of the show. I lugged Pinky onto the platform, hopped to his universe, and rolled him off. Looking around, I saw that they were having a monster show in this reality, too. The stands and exhibits had all closed for the day. I couldn't spot my own alternate, so I stepped outside. As I'd hoped, a hard core of pickets were still holding vigil, lighting candles for the monster's innocent souls. I gave one protester the test tube containing the disembodied brain's memories. "There's enough evidence here to convict Calverley under the Cruelty to Monsters Act," I said. The demonstrators stared in surprise while I unfolded the hopper and pressed go home. I bumped into Vanzetti as I returned to the hotel. "Thanks for your help today," I said. "Buy you a drink?" The penniless president jumped at the offer. We repaired to the bar, where I told him how I'd uncovered the brain's plot to escape from its owner by framing him for murder.
"Shame about Calverley," said Vanzetti.
"Yes, but he did bring it on himself by importing ringers to win the show. You can write it up in the Advanced Studies Journal. Do you have a gruesomely ironic deaths section?"
"We call it the obituaries page," Vanzetti said, trying to stifle a smile.
Of course, theorists rarely get eaten by a rogue equation. "At least I got rid of the imports before they hurt anyone else," I said. "And I think people might appreciate Monster Bane a little more when the full story gets out. Rumours, danger, monster rebellions, all great publicity. I'll put my prices up tomorrow."
"And I see you managed to keep the hopper," said Vanzetti, raising his glass of scotch. "Cheers!"
"Cheers." I clinked my glass to his, then knocked back my monster tonic with a single slimy slurp. The end. Ian Creasy was born in 1969 and lives in Yorkshire, England. When rock and roll stardom failed to return his calls, he took up writing. Thus far, he's sold 50-odd short stories, and his debut collection, Maps of the Edge, was published in 2011. When he's not writing, Ian can often be found in his garden or out hiking. For more information, check out Ian's website, www.iancreasy.com, or follow him on Twitter, @Ian_Creasy. Thanks once again for listening. Please tune in next month for our May story, The Equation in the Mirror by Therese Arkenberg.